Continuing our series this morning, looking at the vision of the church and elements of the vision of the church, and we're going to be looking at our call to be a people who witness regionally, who speak to our communities and engage with our communities. And I just want to highlight a couple of areas where we have involvement as a church, where we are speaking into our community and making a difference, and not just speaking, but actually acting in relation to a community. I'm going to ask Malcolm to talk a wee bit about startup, and then Fiona from CAP's going to come up and talk to us.
Thanks, Alistair. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Malcolm Smith, and I'm SBC's link person with Startup Stirling. Startup, as many of you will know, was started some 25 years ago by Stirling Churches. So it's Christian in its foundation, and its main job now is to run the food bank in Stirling. And demand has increased hugely over the last few years. So most of the food given is donated by local people through collection points at churches and supermarkets and many other places. And then Startup operates two food banks in the Stirling area and also does deliveries to the more outlying areas of the whole of Stirling area and Stirling Council area. And that about, at the moment, around 300 people every week, a third of them children, receive emergency food packs from Startup. And last year, more than 800 children were supported. The biggest single reason for referral to the food bank is problems with benefits, particularly the introduction of universal credit. And people don't usually like having to go to a food bank. They only go because they need to. They really need that help. So for those of you who like figures, here's some up on the screen just now. And as you'll see, last year, a total of over 116,000 meals were given out. And that's an 11% increase on 2017. So what's that got to do with us? Well, in Matthew 25, we read, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you?" And the king replies, "When you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me." So SBC has its own donation station where you can give non-perishable food at the bottom, very bottom of the stone stairs. And I want to give a big thank you to those who already give and those who help financially and several people in the church who already volunteer with Startup. But we're a big church, we've got a lot of resources, we've got a lot of people, and to be frank, I feel we could do more. Donations, food to the donation station have decreased over the last year or two and not increased. Right now, Startup is coming up to its toughest time of the year when donations tend to drop off during the summer as people are away on holiday, but demand increases because children are off school and so they no longer get school meals. So what can you do? First of all, yes, you can give donations. And if, I know parking's difficult in the church, if it's difficult for you to bring heavy stuff into the donation station here, then there are donation points at all the major supermarkets. If you shop for groceries online, why not put a couple of items in your regular shopping list and either bring them in or drop them off at one of these other points? Or maybe you could organize something in your small group, you know, to do collections together and then drop them off at Startup in Spring Curse, you know, once a month perhaps. If you'd prefer to help financially, do feel free to give a gift to me or to, better still, to set up a standing order regularly. There's information on Startup's website. And one other thing that Startup do is provide starter packs to recently rehoused homeless people. And they have an Amazon wish list on there, which you can find the link to from their Facebook page. So if you like to look at that, that would you can donate through that as well. And I should have mentioned earlier, Lifeway, a few groups help in the church. So Lifeway have given a generous donation to Startup earlier this year, and then some of them had the opportunity to go and visit the unit down at Spring Curse. So Finally, you can volunteer, of course, if you've got a few hours spare each week. So please don't leave this to others. You know, please think about what you can do yourself. Okay, and if you've got any questions or would like anything more, any more information, please do come and talk to me afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Malcolm. Yeah. Fiona is our new CAP Centre Manager, one of the real things to celebrate this year in terms of the life of church. Has been the establishment of a CAP centre, working with a number of other churches in the areas. We've been doing that. So it's great to welcome you, Fiona, and hear a little bit about your work. So just tell me, what is CAP? What does it do?
CAP stands for Christians Against Poverty, and they do a variety of things. One of those is a debt centre, which we have here in Stirling Baptist. But there are other services, such as Job Club, Fresh Start, which helps people fight addictions, and then the Money Course as well. So it's all around fighting the effects of debt, but also the causes of debt.
Great. So you've just been working now for a few months with CAP. So tell me, how's that going? What's it like?
David's laughing. yeah, it's going really well, actually. It's a great organisation. They have over 300 staff down in head office who are so supportive. They've got a great training team. And even the people in all the debt centres are just so supportive. We've got all these Facebook groups and WhatsApps and so on. So if you've got a question, somebody's going to reply to you if you put it out there. So it is, it's going really well. It was a bit hectic to begin with because there was so much just to set up to get going. But we've started our visits. We've got people that can go with us on visits. We're about to train up our befrienders and get the prayer group together as well to support it in that way.
So tell me, what is it that excites you about it or drives you when you get up in the morning?
I've got a real passion for people that are in need. And the people who contact us have been in dire situations often for years. They're inviting us into their home. We have the opportunity to pray for them and to tell them that there is a solution to their debt. Not only that, but we've got all these volunteers that come around to the client just to support them in prayer, to bless them in different ways, and get alongside them if that's what they need. So it's great.
Great. Thank you so much, Fiona. Do talk to Fiona. Fiona doesn't normally come to our church, so it's a good opportunity to speak to her over coffee and things and hear more of the exciting stories. I'm in a privileged position because I hear weekly updates on from various folks of stories of interacting with people in terms of debt. And it's so exciting to see that ministry and the impact that it's beginning to make in relation to people. This morning I want to look at the passage that we read in 1 Kings chapter 17, and I want to think a little bit about this. Obviously it's Pentecost, and so we want to think about Pentecost as well. And some of you may be aware, but the Feast of Pentecost wasn't a Christian festival originally. It was a Jewish festival. It continues to be a Jewish festival. In fact, I think today the festivals coincide. They don't always coincide, but I think they coincide today. So the Jews are celebrating the Feast of Weeks, or where they celebrate the period of 50 days, and the notion of the giving of the law. And there's this idea that at Pentecost, not only is the harvest celebrated, but the idea that God gave the law. And it's really interesting, the story that we read in Matthew's gospel about that vision and encounter with the transfigured Christ. And Moses and Elijah appear with Christ. And then Moses, for any Jew, and if we were Jewish reading that, we would immediately see Moses represents the law. He represents the Torah. And the giving and the coming of the law. And Elijah, as the greatest of the prophets, or one of the greatest of the prophets, because Moses was a prophet as well, but as one of the greatest of the prophets, represents the application of the law. And there this key idea of the law and its application. And I don't know if you caught in the New Testament reading that the little line at the end of the story of the Transfiguration, because whenever you read a story like that in the New Testament, there's always a little takeaway. It'll give you, the reason we're telling you this story is this. And the line at the end of the story of the Transfiguration is the notion that Elijah has come and will restore all things. Interesting phrase. Restoring all things. Now, we haven't got time to go into that. I'm sure Matt will explain it to you later on if you ask him, our resident PhD New Testament scholar. But it's interesting. What is that talking about? The restoration of all things. Well, I believe what it's talking about is actually the application of God's law and God's order to a disintegrating and fragmented world. And so the coming of God's Spirit and the Feast of Pentecost, which celebrates the coming of the law, is not some sort of legalistic event, but it's about a transformation and an application of God's order in our world. What we've been hearing about in these stories is actually an expression of that, where we have a Christian community that is addressing the brokenness and the fragmentedness of our society. Part of our vision as a church is to be a Spirit-filled, empowered, witnessing community. And what does that mean? That means that we have to embody the law of God in such a way that we begin to address the fragmentation and the brokenness of our society. We have to become ambassadors of God's order in the midst of this. We have to be those who apply that work of God into the midst of a society. We see this in the story of Elijah in 1 Kings 17. We read last week about the Elijah announcing a famine and the consequences of God's judgment. And Elijah was okay. Well, the society wasn't doing so good because he was at a brook being fed by ravens, getting steak sandwiches every morning and water. And then God takes him from this place of comfort and he's told to go to Sidon, which is up towards modern Lebanon. So he traveled from close to the Dead Sea up to Sidon near modern Lebanon. And God took him to a strange place and he takes him to an encounter with a single mother. And it's interesting to see this encounter with a single mother. You know, one of the things in our society is that we have a moral crisis going on. One of the things that drives me to distraction, and it maybe is I'm just becoming a grumpy old man, is that I find myself shouting at the telly a lot more. you do that? And at the moment, news coverage drives me to distraction. Have you noticed this in terms of what's happening in the moral calibration of our society? So we have a preoccupation about who in the cabinet or who's standing for the leadership of the whether they took drugs at one point 30 years ago and whether they were at a party that some, you know, and this is what we're focusing on. Meanwhile, we have a society where we've just been hearing about startup, where in our own very communities, increasingly 11% increase in people going to food banks in our own community. And hey, Stirling's not a bad community. You know, what's happening in our society? And yet our media is preoccupied with an agenda that isn't actually morally driven. It looks like it is, but it's a farce. It's actually empty. And what's happened in our communities and in our society is, as someone once said, we know the cost of everything and the value of nothing. There has been a disintegration in the value system of our world. And single parenthood in our communities is desperate now. Again, the fabric of our society has suffered an enormous hit in the last few decades. Do you know that 40% of children are now born out of wedlock? I mean, that's amazing. And that figure continues to increase. The number of children that are being brought up in single-parent households has just gone astronomical in the last decade. And again, these things are drivers of poverty in our society. The statistics in relation to parenthood and financial well-being are horrendous. And things like CAP and its addressing of debt and these issues is actually speaking into the poverty that is being driven by a breakdown of traditional Christian morality. And it's desperate. But here's the thing. Now, we can all sit here and go, that's terrible. Yeah, it's awful. Our society's a mess. It's a good thing we're all in here, church, singing hymns, listening to the Bible. You know, it's great, isn't it? I used to, when I left school, I went and worked with a Christian mission organization. And at one stage, I was in Amsterdam working in the red light district, part of a relief agency. I always have to add that in. And I once met my in-laws, and they said, what did you do? And I went, oh, I worked in the red light district in Amsterdam. It wasn't a good introduction. Anyway, but I had a leader of an organization that we were part of. And, you know, and he used to talk about a thing called the Christian bubble syndrome, which was actually when God works in our lives, we tend to turn into nicer people. Not always great people, but nicer people. And we tend to like hanging out with nice people who don't really have complicated lives. And you know, and we'll sit and we'll invite one another around, and we'll maybe sit there and play games of Snap and things in our little Christian bubble, and you're going, you're nice, and I'm nice, and, you know, there's a nasty world out there, but I'm glad it all feels so comfortable and nice here. And he used to describe that as the Christian bubble syndrome, and actually, you know, it does inflict us. It afflicts us even here as a church. But God called Elijah to go to Sidon and speak to a single parent. There are all sorts of issues here for Elijah. This is a woman who isn't part of Israel. She isn't part of that cozy club. She's a single parent. She's in dire poverty. She's maybe actually somebody that you would think God isn't interested in. And yet he goes and he interacts and he engages with her. Here's my question to you as a church. What is our message to the 40% that are born outside of wedlock? You know, what's our message? What are we actually saying as a Christian community? What does the application of God's law, the voice of Elijah, look like in a society where that's the case? What's our message? What's our engagement? Elijah went as a prophet of God, carrying the law of God to a single parent in Sidon. Jesus made this point in Luke 4. Didn't go down too well, and they almost tried to stone him and kill him in his own village. We read about it last week. But here's the question. What's the engagement look like? I believe as a church and as God's people, we have to engage again with our society. And here's the thing. It's going to require that we move out of our comfort zones. It's going to require that we have to start rethinking what the application of God's laws look like in terms of our fragmented, broken society. Sitting in the security of our churches, sitting playing Snap with one another and saying, I like you and you like me and I'm glad it's all safe and secure and we're all respectable folks in our church, is not going to cut it in our modern society and is not going to see the transformation that God's Spirit was sent to bring. I love 1 Kings 17 because it shows us a God, and it shows us the God that we worship who feeds the hungry and raises the dead. And here we have Elijah going out to this single mother in Sidon, bringing the message that that is the God that he serves. That he serves a God who truly does feed the hunger and raise the dead. He's actually bringing a message which is recognizing that God is the God of hope. You see, this woman is under a death sentence. There's actually parallels in 1 Kings 17 with the story of Haggai and Ishmael. You ever thought about that story in Genesis 21? Interesting story. Remember, Abraham disobeys God, and Hagar, his maidservant, ends up pregnant. Ishmael is born, and then Sarah gets pregnant. Abraham is born. So it's like, okay, God's will. We know God's purposes. Here we go. Abraham and Sarah. It's great. But what about Hagar and Ishmael? You know, Sarah's response, and it's a wee bit like this church's response. It's like, let's get rid of it. You know, let's get Hagar and Ishmael out of the picture. You know, by the way, that wasn't God's response, but that was Sarah's response. And we're told that Abraham, from pressure from Sarah, ended up putting out Hagar and Ishmael into the desert to die. You know, he kind of felt, well, it's not God's will. God hasn't really got a purpose, and it doesn't fit neatly into God's purposes and plans. So we'll get rid of it. Do you remember what happened with Ishmael and Hagar? They were dying in the desert, and the angel of God appears to them. Some believe that may be a pre-incarnation expression of Christ. And he says to them, do not fear. God is going to look after you. You know, I love that. Because it's reiterated here in 1 Kings 17. As Elijah applies the law of God in a fragmented society, he goes and he addresses this woman. And he says, God has not abandoned you. I am here to bring the message of a God who feeds the hungry and raises the dead. You know, this requires Elijah to get out of his comfort zone. You know, I mean, it's the thing that you see in this God. I mean, it's what Jesus comments on. Jesus says, you know, Elijah could have gone to those in Israel. He could have gone to those who all had the same moral framework. He could have gone to those who had the moral law. He could have gone to those who God's purposes were working through and being expressed. But no, he chose a widow in Sidon that required Elijah to come out of his comfort zone, to required a breaking down of cultural and religious divides. You know, I sometimes hear stories from some of the things that we do in our regional areas, and the truth is, the world in which an awful lot of people live is not the world I live in. You know, it's a world that is so different from the world that I live in. It's a world that is subject to pressures that I have no imagination of what it's really like. You know, what is it like to be so desperate in terms of your benefits that you're having to go to a food bank to feed your family? What is it like to be so embroiled in the depth of debt that it feels like a sentence of death? What does it feel like? But God calls us, and he calls us as a church, to cross those barriers. God calls us, and regionally we believe this, that we are called to be a spirit-filled witnessing community, and that means going out beyond the walls of this church to address those in different cultural and moral and religious situations from ourselves, to be the voice of God in those contexts. You know, and what I love in this story of 1 Kings 17 is, here's the thing. Elijah does not arrive as the white knight to save the day. You know, he comes to a place and he says, I have to learn from you. You know, not only I have to learn from you, I have to receive from you. You know, it isn't, oh, we're going to go out and save the world. It's actually, you know, God is working out here. I remember when I was a young theological student, one of the things that really impressed me was the notion that God dwells with the marginalized. And that if you're looking to find God, you won't usually find him at the centers of power and prosperity. You will find him on the margins. You will find him with the single parents. You will find them with those who are struggling in relation to debt. You will find them with those who have fragmented and disintegrated moral situations. God is their present. And here Elijah has to learn this lesson. God is working in the life of this single parent. Elijah, you aren't bringing the presence of God like the Calvary running over the hill. You're discovering the work of God in the margins. You know, and again, as a church, if we have vision, we can't believe that the work of God is just located here in this place on a Sunday morning. The work of God is occurring in the margins, and we're called to discover that work of God. I mean, again, that's the thing I love about CAP, the way it does uncover the work of God. He discovers the way that God works on those margins. You see, Elijah comes, and he in the midst of scarcity, he talks of abundance. In the midst of desolation, he speaks about provision, and he invites the woman to participate in God's new reality. You see, he goes out to the margins, and he says, you know, God's working here, and I want you to discover God, not by coming to my reality, not by coming to my world, not by conforming to the standards and the precepts that somehow I want to impose here, but I want you to discover how God is working in your situation, in your midst. I want you to discover the living God, and actually, in that discovery, I will know something of the work of God too. And so he invites the woman to participate in God's new reality. And we see this wonderful story where death is swallowed up in promise, despair in hope. And again, not because Elijah has come and brought something to the situation, but because he's discovered the work of God, the work of the Spirit, in a surprising place. You know, I know it's easy to look at our world and think God's not at work in it, to think it's a mess, to bemoan the collapse of moral standards, to bemoan the state and the choices that so many people make. But you know what? We are called to carry the message of God into the marginalized situation. And the message of this God is that death is swallowed up in the promise of Christ. That's what was preached on the day of Pentecost. It's a promise that despair can be countered by hope. And here's what Elijah brings to this woman. He communicates to her, God has not forgotten you. God has not forgotten you. Again, what are we doing in Star Off and in CAP and in The Haven and in other places that we work with those on the margins? We're being carriers of God's promise, carriers of the message that God has not forgotten you. You know, I'd love it. So often the church in the past has looked at the messiness and the fragmentedness, and the message it's carried is that, well, you're not good enough for God. You know, if you clean up a lot, you might get in. But the truth is, you're way, way far short from actually the entry standards here. But Elijah's message was, God has not forgotten you. I am here in this place. And he nullifies the sentence of death through bringing that promise. And so here in this story, we see this tug of war between the word of hope based on the reality of God and God's work in the world, and the word of despair based on the apparent realities that are there. As a church, our vision has to be, and you know, and we're going to, in the autumn, do come back in the autumn. We're going to deal with moral and ethical issues, and we're going to explore some of the issues in our society and how we address those. But, you know, in the midst of this, in the midst of a society that so desperately needs to see the restoration of all things, in a society that is confronted by a spirit of despair, even a spirit and a sentence of death, we have to be the purveyors of that word of hope. We will only do that if we get out of our comfort zones and engage with the realities around us. Engage with the realities around us, not with the spirit of the Pharisees and judgmentalism, but the spirit of Elijah, who says we've come here to discover the work of God and help you discover the work of God where you are and in your situation. As a church, that's our vision, to be a spirit empowered witnessing community. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, I just thank you for your word and for the challenge. I thank you for the witness of Elijah. I thank you for the way that you reference this and its ramifications for your people. And Lord, I pray again that we would hear this story afresh. That just like those in Nazareth who heard you preach on this text, Lord, that we would hear your voice and your spirit. Lord, help us to be a people who bring that word of hope to counter that word of despair. Lord, we pray for the restoration of all things. We ask this in your name. Amen.